This is episode number 13 with lifelong entrepreneur and the CEO of Shelf Genie Franchise Systems, Andy Pittman. Welcome to the Path to Freedom podcast. I'm your host, Wes Barefoot, where it's my mission to help aspiring entrepreneurs and existing business owners take control of their lives and create freedom for themselves through business ownership. Each episode, I'll be exploring the strategies and tactics of other successful entrepreneurs that have created freedom in their own lives while sharing what I'm learning along my own path to freedom. I'm glad you're here. Let's drop in. My guest today is a great personal friend of mine and someone that I've learned so much from over the years. I've even had the pleasure of working for him in one of my previous roles. Andy Pittman currently serves as the CEO of Shelf Genie Franchise Systems. In addition to that, he's been a lifelong entrepreneur over the years, owning numerous businesses across multiple industries. In fact, he's even been a franchisee for Shelf Genie for over 10 years now. Prior to joining the corporate office, Andy became a franchisee for Shelf Genie and has a very interesting story of how he has ultimately become the CEO of the entire organization. In addition to that, some of the businesses he's owned over the years have been franchise businesses and some have been non-franchise businesses. This gives Andy a very unique perspective. And in our conversation today, Andy shares some valuable lessons that he has learned over his entrepreneurial career. And I think that anyone listening in is going to benefit greatly from everything that Andy has to share. So without further ado, let's drop in with my good friend, Andy Pittman. Andy Pittman, thank you for dropping into the podcast with me today, man. It's a pleasure.
Happy to be here. Thanks for having me.
Always good chatting with you. Well, look, for those that may not be familiar with you, give a little bit of your background. I mean, I thought you'd be a great person to have on the podcast because you're really a lifelong entrepreneur. So maybe share with the audience listening in a little bit about your background and, you know, kind of how that's led you to where you are today.
Sure, be happy to. So currently I am the CEO of Shelf Genie Franchise Systems. I'm also a franchisee. I've been a franchisee since 2009. For pretty much the last 35 years, I've been self-employed. Matter of fact, for all of the last 35 years until 3 years ago, I was self-employed. In end of 2016, I started working with the home office of Shelf Genie. I came in as COO, and then at the start of 2018, I took over as CEO. But pretty much for the last 35 years, I've been self-employed in independent businesses and in several different franchises that I've had.
You know, how did you get into entrepreneurship? I mean, is it something growing up that you knew you wanted to do, or is it something you kind of fell into, or you know, how did you get started with your very first business? And maybe talk a little bit about what that first business was.
Yes. So, I mean, I would say I'm probably, a lifelong entrepreneur. I started with the traditional paper route when I was, 10 or 12. And then somewhere after my first paper route, I got a job at a community grocery store. And I picked up cigarette butts and bottle caps out of the parking lot and collected the returnable bottles that we used to have back then.
Yeah.
Then from there, I got promoted and I actually moved inside and started as a bag boy and cleaning up rotten produce. And I made $1.50 an hour. So that was a long time ago. And then, just sort of from there, I just, kind of got the entrepreneurial bug. When I was in college, I started an entertainment business. I used to DJ private parties, and I did that for about 4 or 5 years. And then I sold that after I got out of school. I traveled when I got out of college. I traveled for about a year, came back broke, started a job 3 weeks later with some friends of mine who were importing light bulbs. And it was literally just me cold calling places that sold lighting, trying to get them to buy our light bulbs. And I did that for about a year and a half. And then another friend of mine was going to open a sports bar. And sports bars were just becoming popular. So he and I went in together and opened a sports bar. And that was probably like end of 87. So pretty much since then, I've been self-employed, scratching out a living.
I think it's interesting, and it's probably worth noting you went to UNC Chapel Hill, so you're a Tar Heel. Go Tar Heels.
I heard Tar Heel. I am sporting the Tar Heel blue today.
That's right. Yep. So Andy and I are both North Carolinians. We have that in common, amongst other things. But it's interesting. So you started this business in college, and you were actually able to sell it. I mean, you know, a lot of people that start kind of little side businesses in college, it kind of fades out once they get done with school and move on to something else. So how did you kind of have the foresight at that time to build a business that you were then actually able to sell?
You know, I don't think it really resonated with me at that point, or I hadn't even thought about selling it. But when I got out of school and decided I was going to travel, you know, I realized that, okay, I've got these people. I was based in Chapel Hill at the time, and a lot of them was student-based parties and organizations, but there was others because we've been in business for a while, you know, that were calling. And so I said, okay, let me just see if there's somebody out here who's interested. And so I was able to, you know, sell it for someone, and I basically just sold it for, you know, what I had in it and equipment and a little bit of money. It wasn't a lot of money, but, you know, I didn't really lay the groundwork from the beginning to make it, you know, a scalable business to sell.
Yeah, well, that's interesting, and something I want to talk more about as we get further into conversation today. You know, the differences between a scalable business where you do have a good exit strategy versus, you know, kind of buying yourself a job in a business where you don't necessarily have that same type of exit strategy. But, you know, talk a little bit more about some of your experience, because I know for me, you know, knowing you for a while, it's been fascinating to hear and learn about some of the different businesses that you've been involved in. I mean, it's really been kind of all over the board, right? I mean, you know, you had a sports bar, as you mentioned. You're currently a franchisee with Shelf Genie, as well as the CEO of the entire Shelf Genie organization. But you've also owned numerous franchises outside of Shelf Genie over the years, and then also some other non-franchise business. So maybe just give us kind of a quick overview of some of the different businesses that you've been involved in over the years, because I think it gives you a very interesting perspective, because you've been in many different industries as a business owner.
Yeah, the first business I really owned, you know, significant size business, was I owned a sports bar in the late 80s. And that was great. Great to be, you know, 21 to 25 and own a sports bar.
I bet.
you know, I did that for 3 years to the point in time I just realized that I was kind of burnt out on dealing with people drinking and partying all the time. And so we were able to sell that, which was good. And then after that's when I bought my first franchise. And, you know, at that point in time, I wasn't necessarily looking for a business that I could build and scale and sell. And so that particular business was one that, you know, you could make a nice living by yourself, but it was really dependent upon the owner. Mm-hmm. I had one employee. And eventually I did sell it. The person who bought it from me, he ran it for, gosh, probably another 20 years. And then he sold it to the employee who had been with him. And so that business is still going today. I had a couple other ventures in there with franchises that didn't turn out so well, whether I was a bad franchise or they were a bad franchise, or I don't know, but it didn't work out for me. And then in the early 2000s, I bought a retail appliance store here in Raleigh. And I did that for about 12 years. And we built that. We doubled the sales in the first 6 or 7 years. And then we had the recession of 2008 come along, and that didn't help us. And I did that until the point I just decided that, you know, there wasn't a lot of future there. The margins were so slim. And during that time period, I had started my Shelf Genie business, and it had grown and done really well. And then I had a business partner in my Shelf Genie business, and we'd also started a cabinet business. And so I wasn't lacking of things to do. So I made the decision in 2012 to close my appliance store and liquidated all of that. And fortunately, was able to get my money out of that. And then, you know, we just set headlong into, you know, building our Shelf Genie business and our cabinet business. And our cabinet business, it was a franchise, and then the franchise portion sort of closed, but was able to build that up until we sold it earlier this year. And really probably the best thing for us in that business was me leaving in, you know, the day-to-day aspect of it and coming to work at Shelf Genie, because I had to really step out of it. Mm-hmm. And hire somebody to do the sales aspect. And really at that point, I was just spending minimal hours on the weekend, primarily just doing sort of the paperwork and back end. But that enabled us to get that business in a position where it wasn't really dependent on any of the owners for anything, and made it able for us to sell it, which was, it was nice to be able to do that.
Yeah, that's a common theme that, you know, comes up amongst guests I've had on the podcast. And, you know, a lot of the stuff I read and listen to, you know, is where when a business owner can finally kind of remove themselves as a bottleneck, that's when their business is really poised to grow. And that's when you have a business you can think about selling. You know, if a business is too reliant on the business owner for, you know, a lot of the day-to-day activities or the you know, majority of the production happening in the business, any halfway educated potential buyer is going to see that and realize, well, hey, when this current owner is out of the picture, I'm going to have to make up everything that they've currently been producing or generating through their own efforts. So when you can finally remove yourself as a bottleneck, you have a much more sellable business. And so I think that's something that's important for, you know, anyone that's considering to get into business for themselves to consider. You know, it's never too early to start thinking about what your exit strategy should be in a business. I mean, you know, it could be 10 years down the road, could be 20 years down the road, could be more short term than that, but you should always at least be thinking a little bit about, you know, is the business I'm considering getting into, is there an exit strategy? And what do I have to do as the owner? What is my role as the owner really designed to be so that I can scale the business and eventually be able to sell it should I want to?
Yeah, I mean, in my first discovery day, when I was looking at Shelf Genie as a business opportunity, that was one of the questions I asked was, you know, what's your long-term goal? What's your exit strategy? And I was like, hell, I haven't even got an entry strategy yet. But it was a really good question because, you know, and I've talked to, you know, several franchisees over the last 3 years, you know, since I've come on into the home office. About, you know, exit strategies, because it is important to have one, because, you know, you'd like your business to sell when it's on the upswing, where there's still, you know, growth potential for somebody else versus things are going in the, you know, in the wrong direction. And then it's, you know, a business that's less attractive to people and there's more work for them to do. And then, you know, one of the things you just said about, you know, the owner being the bottleneck, I know you had Jack Daly on, and Jack's talked to the Shelf Genie franchisees several times, and I've heard him speak before, and he talks about just a sales manager in general. And for a lot of small businesses, the owner is the sales manager because they're doing it all.
Yeah.
And so I think a lot of times small business owners, you know, their mindset really prohibits them from growth because they think, I can't do anymore. But if they would get out of the way and hire somebody to replace them, that person, you know, and they compensate them correctly, that person can really grow the, you know, the business to a different level, because, you know, a sales manager should be able to assemble a team that pays for himself.
Exactly.
And so I think that's probably one of the biggest things that small business owners have to learn over time, is that, you know, they don't need the control. They need to get out and, you know, hire people that are better than them. There's definitely people that are better salespeople than me, better designers for different businesses. And, you know, if you find those people, then it allows you to free up, you know, and have more time, whether it's free time or time to focus on different aspects of your business.
Yeah. Or get involved in other businesses. But I that's a good point that you bring up. And, you know, I think a lot of business owners, even if they see why it makes sense to bring in, say, a sales manager, or, you know, to take steps to remove themselves as a bottleneck, you know, commonly they think, well, I can't afford to do that right now. I can't afford to bring on a sales manager. But to your point, you bring on the right person, set the right expectations, and give them what they need to be successful, they should more than pay for themselves in that position. So you may have a very, very short term, you know, kind of dip in cash flow because you bring in some additional overhead. But, you know, within a pretty quick period of time, they should not only be paying for themselves and whatever role you have them in, but also generating additional income for the business if they're the right person for the job. So, you know, it's, I think, important to take a little more of a long-term view. And you see it with Shelf Genie, you know, franchisees, with designers too. You know, they'll get to a certain number of designers and hesitate to bring on that next designer because they don't think they have enough appointments coming in to keep someone busy. And that's a short-term, you know, view that, again, leads to bottlenecks.
Yeah. And you know, one of the things that I found when I brought a salesperson on really to replace me is I said, you know, if you sell within this range, I'll pay you full commission. If you go under that, we'll load a little bit. And he said, well, what about if I sell on the higher side? And I said, well, you know, wait a minute. You know, I've been doing this a long time. I know what I'm doing. You know, you can't sell too much above this. But if you do, here's what we'll do. Well, he ended up selling probably 85% of his jobs for considerably more than what I was selling them for, because he didn't have the mindset was that this is all people are willing to pay. So, you know, bringing people in that are, you know, smarter than you, better than you, have different thoughts and don't have the same mental constraints, you know, should help your business.
Yeah. No, I think that's a good point, regardless of the type of business that you're getting into. I mean, I think for most people, one of the goals they have when considering business ownership is to create more freedom and flexibility in their schedules, right? Well, you can't do that if you're not willing and able to set your business up so that there is some scalability there. Otherwise, you know, you're probably going to end up working twice as hard as you were before doing whatever it was you were doing prior to owning a business. And that's a recipe for burnout. We've seen that.
And one of the things I would just say I've learned over time is, you know, you can't buy time. You can buy a lot of things with money, but you can't buy more time. And so as I've gotten older, time has become more, you know, more valuable to me and how I want to spend my time and where I want to spend it and what I want to do with it, which I probably didn't have that perspective when I was younger, just because when you're younger, you know, you're not thinking about that.
You think you have all the time in the world. Right. Yeah, yep. No, I agree. I mean, that's something that's become a lot more clear to me over the years. And fortunately, because I've, you know, been around a lot of people that have more experience than me, and I've been able to kind of learn that perspective from them. But to me, it's the absolute most valuable resource out there is time. And so whatever you can do to better control your time is a worthwhile endeavor. And business ownership done right can be a fantastic way to really take control of your time and your schedule. So How did you get into your first franchise? Did you kind of have this idea that, you know, hey, maybe a franchise business is the route I should go? Or is it something you just kind of stumbled across? What led you to kind of start investigating some different franchise businesses? And I believe your first franchise was a vinyl repair business. Is that right?
Yeah. So when I sold my bar in the end of 1990, I think 90 or 91, I was unemployed. And at that point, I didn't want to get a job. So I was looking for something else. I looked at a lot of different things. A couple of things I passed on were bottled water, which turns out
it's pretty big. It's pretty good idea.
Yep. And also, you know, business centers or mailbox places. And at that point, there were no Kinko's, there were no mailbox, et cetera, you know, UPS stores, none of that. So I passed on two really good things.
Hey, do me a favor. Let me know the next thing you're planning to pass on. I may want to get in on that.
Yeah, but I did stumble upon a vinyl repair business, or as they call it, a thermoplastic repair. I'm sure I probably saw it an entrepreneur, a business opportunity, something. And that was a, you know, it was a good business. I did it for a while, but there was, you know, you can only build that so much, because a lot of that was really by the hands, you know, the owner had to do it because of the quality involved. But I did that for about 7 years, and then I sold that and moved on.
So, you know, in your experience owning franchise businesses, owning non-franchise businesses, now you've got experience, you know, as a CEO of a franchise organization, so you've got experience on the franchisor side as well. You know, what are some of the biggest differences that you see between franchise businesses and non-franchise businesses? And what are some of the pros and cons in your opinion?
So, you know, one of the big differences is going to be support. And, you know, depending upon your independent business, you may or may not have support. I mean, when I opened my bar, I didn't have like a support group, so to speak. You know, with the franchise business, you've got the franchisor, you've got the franchise community. Mm-hmm. some businesses have that. When I was in the appliance business, I was part of a buying group. And so we had a fairly strong, you know, community and group of experienced owners that you could call on to help you with. But with, you know, with a franchise, you've got a people who are doing the same thing as you. You've got a franchisor who can hopefully limit the mistakes you make along the way to hopefully ramp up your, you know, your success probability. You know, and it just, you know, which is better, or how would I do it again? It really just depends. I mean, I think some businesses, you really need that community and support. And just in general, I would probably say if I did a business that, you know, didn't have some sort of support system already in place, I would probably try to find and build my own community of support, whether it's just with an independent business coach or something. I just think, you know, having someone or a group of people to bounce ideas off and make suggestions, you know, just help open up your mind to other opportunities.
Yeah, I think it's huge. And in my opinion, it's one of the most valuable parts of aspects of being part of a good franchise organization is, you know, obviously there's all the support that should come from the franchisor, but it's that community that you get to tap into amongst the franchisees. And it's not, you know, created equally across all franchise systems, but, you know, Shelf Genie, for example, has a fantastic community of franchise owners, and everybody's very willing to share and to help. And, you know, as we go through very difficult and uncertain times like we have the past several months with COVID-19, you know, it's been invaluable to be a part of, you know, a community like this, you know, and credit to you, Andy, you've done a great job, you know, in a leadership position, kind of, you know, providing good leadership and guidance to everyone, even though there's not really a playbook for how to handle this. But, you know, it's been very cool to see the whole franchise community come together, support each other. And it's just a good reminder, you know, especially on the really crappy days, that you're not in this by yourself, right? There's a whole, you know, community of other franchisees in the same business, in the same position as you, going through the same stuff. And, you know, the ideas that are shared can really be a huge benefit. So I think that's a really good point. It's in my opinion, one of the most valuable aspects of being part of a good franchise organization. And then the support in general. I mean, and every franchise is going to have different ways in which they're positioned to support their franchise partners. But, you know, with Shelf Genie, and particularly for me, you know, one of the things that was most attractive to us was a lot of the ongoing support that Shelf Genie provides to franchisees is really aimed at, you know, taking some of the very critical yet time-consuming aspects of managing the day-to-day of the business off the plate of the franchise owner, which frees up a huge amount of our time as owners to focus on, you know, what Jack Daly would call your high payoff activities, right? The things that are really going to move the needle in the business. I mean, you know, the call center is a great example of that. It's very, very critical that we're responsive on the phones and follow up with people and have good conversion rates, but it's also very time consuming, and it's not the best use of time of the business owner to be taking all of those calls. So that's another, I think, key thing to evaluate and understand when you're looking at a franchise opportunity is what's the upfront support look like, training, systems, processes, but also what's the ongoing support? How's the franchisor going to continue to add value even once you've been trained and you've learned the business and you're well established as a franchisee?
Yeah, I mean, I think, you know, the support, those things, you know, one of the things I look for or that I liked about Shelf Genie when I decided to become a franchisee was the fact I didn't have to go out and hire all this back end. You know, I didn't have to have a call center. I didn't have to have a receptionist. I didn't have to have someone to create my marketing, my ads. You know, all that was basically done for us. Yeah. You know, my job was basically, you know, find some designers, find an installer. And so that's just sort of made it easy. And, you know, just in relation to community and support, you know, into the COVID-19 and what's going on, you know, most business owners at some point in time, there's fear and doubt, you know, fear, am I going to make a sale today? Am I going to get paid? Are my designers going to make a sale? And then you add something like, you know, a pandemic on there, and it just, you know, snowballs from there. And so one of the things we tried to do early on was just communicate as well as we could, as often as we could, without communicating too much. So, you know, with our franchise partners, we started having weekly calls with them rather than bi-weeklies. And some of them were just updating because things were happening so fast. And then with our designers, we started out having two calls a week because we wanted to keep them, you know, we wanted to keep that sense of community going, as well as use it just as an opportunity to train. And then we, you know, we talked with our franchise community, our FAC, in terms of finding out what's going to help you guys. And so we did some things with invoicing and spreading invoices out, letting some people delay payments or pay with credit cards, depending upon their certain situations. And then, you know, you had different people that were coming and going in terms of how their businesses were affected. Some were still able to run appointments if they had designers that wanted them. Some had to just shut everything down. And for the most part, you know, most people were shut down in April, but you know, May has come back and rebounded pretty nicely. We've got all of our locations open but two, and those two will open over the next couple of weeks. So yeah, it's just nice to have that sense of community that you can, you know, bounce things off of and get ideas and, you know, support the group as best you can.
Yeah, and you know, I think the move to weekly calls was great. It helped keep everyone engaged, even when there might, you know, not have been as much to actually work on, because some locations were like totally shut down, as you mentioned. And I think, you know, one thing you guys did really well with all of this was you gave people options, right? Because you realize not everyone's in the exact same boat. Depending on where you are in the country, you may be more shut down or kind of partially shut down. So understanding that, you gave people options so they could choose what was the best for them and their business where they stood at the time. But, you know, as you kind of alluded to earlier, because you kind of quickly referenced that, you know, one of the businesses you were in and sold recently, you know, you came in as a franchisee, and shortly after that, the franchisor kind of decided they didn't want to do this whole franchise thing anymore. So a lot of the support that, you know, you were kind of expecting and anticipating to get, you know, didn't really exist throughout the duration of your time, you know, owning that business. So, you know, definitely not all franchises are created equal. So, you know, in your experience, knowing what you know now, you know, what advice would you give to someone that's, you know, maybe just beginning to investigate different franchise businesses? What are some things that you would really look for in a attractive franchise opportunity? And also, what are some red flags that you would be on the lookout for?
Yeah, so obviously, if you're looking at franchises, you want to validate with existing franchisees, as many as you can, because you want to talk to, you know, the successful ones and the ones that are not as successful, because you'll probably learn as much or more from the ones that aren't successful as the one that are, because you can look at them and say, okay, I can see myself falling into that trap, or I can see what they're doing and this is the way I can get out of it. But, you know, one thing that's always been, you know, forefront in my mind is the franchise is like a bike, and if you, you know, it's a system, and if you ride it the way it's supposed to be ridden, you know, you can ride fast in a long time. But if you start doing things differently, you know, the wheels kind of come off and it doesn't go as well. And so for me, you know, in my personal business, I've always looked at the franchisor just to give me that bike to ride, but I never wanted to put myself in a position that I felt like it was the franchisor's responsibility to run my business or push start me or anything. They were there just, you know, to help me when I needed it, but I never felt like they were going to prohibit me. So I think a good franchise system will support you whatever way you can, or that they can, but they shouldn't be there, and you should never feel like they're prohibiting you. And in the case of the cabinet business that we had, yeah, I mean, pretty quickly after we bought our franchise and another friend of ours bought theirs, you know, they decided not to franchise anymore. And there hasn't been any support really for the last 5 or 6 years. But we just had to figure out how are we going to make this work. And the first couple of years were really tough. But we just said, okay, you know, we're in it. We've got this investment in there. We've got to figure out how we can make it work and how we can be successful. And so really just, you know, in spite of the franchise, where we were able to, you know, to build it to a position where it was a very profitable business and had a good reputation, so that we could sell it.
Yeah. And you had a nice exit on it. And I love that story. And I think probably one of the biggest things I've learned from, you know, working for you and, you know, just getting to know you over the past several years is, you know, something that you say over and over again, which is, you know, the franchisor can never keep me from being successful. They can only help me be more successful. And that's a mindset that most people don't have when they come into owning a franchise. And, you know, too many people, I think, have this misconception that if they invest in a franchise business, it's just going to kind of be done for them and it's going to fall in their lap. And, you know, I love the bicycle analogy that you use. I've got a blog article out that, you know, kind of uses the same analogy. And, you know, it's the franchisor's responsibility to build a great bike, right? A bike that has the ability to go fast and go far and, you know, win the race, if you want to use that analogy. But it doesn't matter how nice the bike is and how many bells and whistles the bike has. If nobody gets on it and pedals it, it's not going to go anywhere. And the harder you pedal the bike, the more you put into it, the further and the faster it goes. And it's a perfect analogy for franchising because, you know, you could take the best franchise system out there and put a franchisee in it that's not willing to put in the work and follow the system, and it's still not going to turn into a successful business. Right. And then even on the flip side of that, I mean, your example with your cabinet business is perfect. You know, you had little to no support and yet you were still able to kind of put your head down, get it done, figure it out and build a nice profitable business that you were able to sell. And it, you know, we talk a lot on the podcast about Stoic philosophy. And, you know, one of the common themes that the Stoics had is, you know, focusing on things that you can control and not wasting energy on things outside of your control, right? I mean, you had no control what this franchisor did or didn't do, right? Completely outside of your control. What you could control is how you reacted and how you responded to it. And your reaction was figure it out, right? Maybe it sucks, yeah, but I can't control that. Let's figure it out. And, you know, we've already got the investment in. Let's make it work, make it happen.
Yeah, you and I have talked at times through the year about different people who are working really hard, but they're working on all the wrong things.
Yeah.
And you know, the franchisee-franchisor relationship, it is truly a partnership because, you know, if a franchisor doesn't have franchisees that are successful, they're not going to be successful. But, you know, the franchisee has got to want it more than the franchisor. I know a couple of years ago, we had a franchisee that was struggling and they were working on all the wrong things. And they made the comment to me that they were just really surprised that we didn't want it worse than they did. And I said, unfortunately, that's not going to work. And if that's your mindset, this is not going to work out long term, because if I wanted it more than you did, then we wouldn't need franchisees and we would just set up corporate markets everywhere.
Yep.
You know, and I would hire you as a designer and, you know, you wouldn't have the options that you have. So, you know, the franchisee has got to want it bad. They've got to want it more than the franchisor, but it is a relationship that has to work together so that, you know, both sides, you know, it's profitable for both sides.
Well, absolutely. And there are a lot of things that good franchisors can do to support their franchisees and put them in a better position to be successful. And so, but again, the franchisee has to want it. They have to actually take action to leverage the system, the processes, the resources, the support that's there and available to them. You know, in your experience, what are some of the biggest things that a franchisor can do to set their franchisees up for success?
Well, obviously, you know, as much support in different areas that you can give them helps. I mean, like for Shelf Genie, for instance, we have a national call center. I've had several other service franchises in the past that didn't. And I can just tell you that if the franchisees answer to the phone, there's a good percentage of the calls that are not going to get answered for whatever yep. reason, because they're with a client, they're on the phone or whatever. And especially today, because people are just going to keep dialing until they get somebody. So, you know, having a call center, having dedicated support people for different areas that you can go to, you know, the media buying, media creation, you know, it just takes a lot of things off the franchisee's plate that they don't have to do, or they know immediately where to go to. Okay, I need an ad for XYZ magazine. Here's the form I fill out. I send it to the franchisor. They create a nice ad in the brand standard template, and then it comes to me, or it goes directly to the campaign source, and I don't have to worry about it. I don't have yep. to worry about finding the logo and copying and pasting a little man to put in there, you know, or whatever the elements, you know, would be. Those are things that, you know, they don't sound like a lot, but all that stuff, you know, it builds up and it does eat your time away.
Yeah.
Death by a thousand cuts, where you're not really working it on the high payoff activities, the things that can really, you know, move your business forward.
Yeah, and it makes all the difference in the world. I mean, another piece for Shelf Genie is the manufacturing side, right? A new franchisee for Shelf Genie never once has to think about figuring out their supply chain, right? Who am I going to get the products or the solutions from? How am I going to get them shipped? I mean, that alone would take, I don't even know how many months to sort out all the details and the logistics that would go into figuring out supply chain. And Shelf Genie has just already got all of that in place, right? And it's in-house and it's turnkey for a franchisee. Now, of course, they still have to learn the product line and become knowledgeable on that, obviously, but you know, they don't have to figure out or wonder, where am I getting my product from? How am I going to get it shipped to me? And a lot of franchise systems, I mean, the support's going to be different depending on the business, right? A lot of franchisors are in a position to leverage the size of the entire system or network, and they have buying power with that. So they can, in many cases, reduce cost for franchisees. You know, we see some of that at Shelf Genie as well. So, you know, for me, I talk to a lot of people, and some of them are, you know, not that well educated on franchising, and they don't know, you know, if franchising is the right avenue for them. And so a lot of what I do is just educating people on, you know, the pros and cons of franchising, how it works, what to be looking for. I can obviously help match them up with franchise businesses that are very likely to be a good fit for them based on what I'm able to learn about them, and then kind of coach them through their due diligence and investigative process. And, you know, some people have some real preconceived notions about franchising, like, hey, why would I pay all this money up front to become a franchisee? And then why would I give, you know, most franchises have a royalty, which is a percentage of your revenue. Why would I give a percentage of my revenue back to the franchisor ongoing? And to me, it's a simple math calculation, right? It's a very easy formula, which is, you know, you figure out, what am I getting in terms of upfront support, right? Because that's usually what your franchise fee covers. And usually you're going to have some sort of a territory that you own. So is the value there to justify the franchise fee? And then what am I getting in exchange for the royalty that I'm paying in terms of ongoing support? And would that support cost me more than my royalty if I were in business completely on my own? And with most good franchise systems, it's, if you look at it that way, it's very easy to justify, you know, the value that you're getting in exchange for some of these fees that you wouldn't have starting your own business from scratch.
Yeah, I mean, I've looked at, you know, through the years at how much royalty I pay, and I'll just use, you know, Shelf Genie and then my cabinet business, and it always hurt me every week when I sent that royalty repayment into my cabinet business, because they literally weren't doing anything, and, you know, it was not uncommon to go a year and not hear from anybody. Shelf Genie, on the other hand, and this goes back, you know, 5 or 6 years before I was ever working with Shelf Genius. I mean, I knew I paid them a lot of money, but I never looked at it that hard, because I always felt like I was getting, you know, my money's worth out of it. There was so much support that they were doing that for me, it wasn't like I felt like, okay, I'm paying this money and I'm not getting anything in return. There was whatever I needed, there was always somewhere to turn to either get the answer or get referred to the right answer. And so, you know, I think that's important, because if you've got franchisees that are feeling like they're not getting their money's worth, then you'll have discontent build up, you know, overall. Now, would I like to have all the royalties back I paid over the course of the years? Yes. But, you know, in the same breath, I feel like I've gotten, you know, my money's worth in terms of the support and the different types of support that have been provided.
Yeah. And I mean, I know, like in our Shelf Genie business, if I were to crunch the numbers and kind of look at, all right, what we pay for, you know, the call center support, the marketing support, you know, everything else. And if we were to farm that out to other third parties and outsource it, it would cost us probably close to double, you know, what it costs us, you know, as Shelf Genie franchisees. So that's kind of how I look at it, right? And you know, again, we could handle some of it ourselves, yes, but our business would stay much, much smaller, because we'd just be bogged down with minutia that is not the best use of time for us as the business owners.
Yeah, I mean, the important thing to look at is, you know, what are the processes in place that can free up your time as an owner? You know, regardless of whether what the business is, whether it's a franchise or an independent business or whatever, because you don't want a business that's going to revolve 100% around you. I mean, I'll use, like, I've got lots of friends that are, you know, independent reps for different companies, manufacturers reps. You know, that's not really even a business that they can really sell, because it's what that manufacturer can go out and get a rep tomorrow and probably pay them less if you've been with them a long time. So, you know, just having that ability is nice.
Wes here. You may have noticed there's a franchising theme to this podcast, and that's because franchising has had a massive impact on my life, and it's the very reason I'm walking my own path to freedom. In fact, one of my companies is a franchise consulting company where I work with people to help them understand franchising and determine if it might be a good fit for them. And if it is something they want to explore, then I help them navigate the entire investigative process and ultimately find a franchise business that's a great match for them. You know, the fact of the matter is there are thousands and thousands of franchise businesses out there today. And like anything, there are good ones and there are bad ones. Even out of the many, many great franchise companies, not every one of them would necessarily be a good fit for you. You know, buying a franchise is a huge decision and you don't want to wing it. I've helped many people buy franchise businesses over the years, and my wife and I have bought and owned franchises today, and we plan to keep investing in franchise businesses. I love helping people understand this process and help them find a business that's going to be a great fit for them and help them accomplish their goals and ultimately create that freedom in their life that we're all looking for. The best part of all of this is that my services are free to the people I work with. And while I do love to contribute to charities and other great causes, I'm not a nonprofit. I'm compensated by the franchise companies I work with when I introduce them to someone that ends up becoming one of their franchisees. It's very similar to real estate, but with franchises. I have the privilege of working with hundreds and hundreds of the best franchise companies out there across practically every industry. So I can be absolutely confident that when I recommend someone to look at a franchise company, I'm introducing them to a very credible and proven company with a solid business model and great support. So if you think you might be interested in learning more about franchising and seeing if it might be right for you, I'd love to speak with you. Get in touch with me by email at wes@path2freedom.com, path2frdm.com. And also check out my website at path2freedom.com, spelled the same way, where I've got a ton of resources, both franchise and non-franchise related, that will help you start down your own path to freedom. And of course, subscribe to and follow the podcast for more great advice about business ownership. And if you know anyone else that might be interested in speaking with me, please share this podcast with them. Thanks for listening to my shameless plug. Now let's drop back into the episode. So I want to shift gears a bit and, you know, talk a little bit more about your transition into, you know, the CEO role at Shelf Genie. And, you know, it's kind of unique that, you know, you're now the CEO of this entire organization, which includes the Shelf Genie franchise system, the Shelf Genie home office or corporate office, as well as the manufacturing company that supplies all of the materials for the Shelf Genie franchisees. It's a bit unique that you're in that role, but also still a franchisee for Shelf Genie. So, you know, you kind of have one foot in both buckets, if you will. How do you think all of your experience has put you in a good position to step in and lead this organization?
Well, I clearly sit on both sides of the fence. If you want to know which side I'm on, just ask me. Because there are some times where I will speak from the voice of of a franchisee, and some cases I speak from the side of the franchisor. For me, when Alan Young, our former CEO, asked me to come in as COO, I certainly wasn't looking for a job. At that point, it had been 30 years since I had actually worked for anybody else. And I was living in Raleigh, and, you know, our headquarters is obviously in Atlanta. And, you know, for me, one of the first things I said, well, look, I'm not interested in moving. If that's part of this deal, then let's just say no, and I'll keep on moving. And we kind of worked through that and figured, you know, that a remote working or, you know, commuting would be possible. And so generally I go down Monday morning, come back Thursday night. But you know, the main thing that interests me was just, it was something different I'd never done before. And at that point I was, you know, 53-ish. And I figured if I was ever going to try something different besides being, you know, an entrepreneur and work for myself, then this would be the opportunity. And I knew it would be a challenge. And so for me, it's fairly liberating in that I don't really have to worry about, you know, consequences, so to speak, about what if I make a bad decision, because, you know, what's the worst thing that happened? I can get fired and they tell me don't commute to Atlanta every week. Well, I've still got other, you know, at that point I had two other businesses. Now I still have my Shelf Genie business, you know, so I just feel like if I do what's best for me or a franchisee or on the franchisor side, what's best, you know, it's a win for everybody, because I'm not going to do anything intentionally that would sabotage my own business. And so, you know, I have had the unfortunate pleasure of passing along the two largest price increases we've had from our wholesale manufacturing partner in the history of the business 2 years in a row. But it was something that we needed to do from the franchisor side, you know, to make sure that we had good employees. And, you know, just over the transition, you know, when I started, I was COO. So I there was limited things that I dealt with, you know, in that scope. I didn't have to worry about the P&L aspect. I primarily just support for franchisees and operations. And then, you know, over time, as I transitioned to the CEO in 2018, you know, the P&L responsibilities came over to me, although I had sort of been overseeing them over the last 4 or 5 months before I transitioned. And that, you know, I report to the board now. And then over a period of time, we decided that probably our manufacturing facility should report to me. Our board, our parent company owned it, but it reported to somebody else. And so I brought on, the plant fell under my responsibility. And one of the things I did was I brought back Brooke Remington. Brooke had worked with us from 2007 before we were, you know, a franchisee up through 2015. And she has more manufacturing knowledge than anybody in the home office has. You know, she's forgotten more than we have. And so bringing her back was just huge for us, and to be able to make this huge, you know, strides over the last year. Our claims have gotten down to the lowest that they've ever been. With the help of, you know, COVID and sort of the slowdown, we were able to get manufacturing times, our lead times down. And so it's just, you know, bringing in people that were experts and smarter than me at certain things has definitely helped us. So, you know, just having a good support team of key people in the home office has been a big help.
Yeah. And I think, I mean, it should be noted, right, that in your franchise business for Shelf Genie, so you own the Raleigh, North Carolina market, you know, what would be probably called the Triad market, Greensboro, High Point, Winston-Salem, and also Charlotte, North Carolina. So you have a very large business, you know, by territory and by revenue. You're one of the largest owners in the entire system. So, you know, any decision that you make at the CEO level, it's going to impact your franchise business just as much, if not more, than pretty much any other franchisee in the network, right? And I think that is a fantastic kind of combination, right? Because it really solidifies that alignment between home office and franchisee, right? I mean, you said it earlier, franchising is a partnership. You know, any good franchisor knows that the only way they're going to be successful is if they have successful franchisees. Well, you know, you've got experience in both now. So often, you know, the franchisor doesn't necessarily have that boots on the ground experience, you know, that a franchisee would. So, you know, you've been there, you've grown the business, you've built it. And so it gives you, I think, a different perspective as CEO, and you understand better some of the ramifications of decisions that you're going to make. You also know when to call BS on a franchisee, right? Which I think is helpful as well. Some franchisees may not appreciate it as much, but, you know, again, there's not much that especially a newer franchisee is going to go through that you haven't been through yourself, or at least seen someone else in the system go through over the years. So I think it's a pretty unique combination that really gives Shelf Genie in particularly a very strong alignment between home office and franchisees. But that's something that you should always be looking for, you know, in a good franchise organization, is really, you know, feel confident that there is a strong partnership between the home office and the franchisees. And probably the best way to get a sense of that is by validating and talking to other franchisees that are a part of that particular system.
You know, with franchisees, I mean, I'm sure there's things out there I haven't experienced, but I've experienced a lot, you know, as a franchise owner for Shelf Genie, as well as, you know, we have numerous corporate markets. So between myself and Scott O'Hara, our corporate markets manager, I mean, there's not a lot we haven't experienced, or either we know somebody who has.
Yeah.
And so, you know, there are times when franchisees will say something to me that I will call BS on. But really, you know, it's important for us to be able to say, okay, here's why we wouldn't do that, and give them examples why. Because, you know, if we're just preaching to them like parent and child, it doesn't do a lot of good.
Yeah.
We can say, you know, I wouldn't do that because of this. And you can talk to XYZ who tried this, and it didn't work. And, you know, and sometimes things change and their responses are different in different markets. And so, you know, I've always willing to test things in my market. I've tested tons for marketing different things. So it is good to have people who are, you know, who come in with different mindsets and try different things. But we also try to, you know, limit the things that they do early on so that it's not going to affect them too much, especially, you know, financially. You don't want to make a lot of mistakes, you know, financially. And then, you know, one of the other things you said was, made me think of just in terms of just the franchisor, I've always felt that our parent company, our franchisor, always put the profitability of the franchisees first. And over the last couple of years, some things went up in price and different fees got added. And over the last couple of years since I've been CEO, we've tried to give back some of that to the franchisors, or excuse me, to the franchisee, so that they're adding a percentage point here, adding a percentage point there. They're not suffering on services, but like, you know, the call center, for instance, we were able to outsource our call center and we drastically reduced the fee that franchisees were paying for call center.
Yep.
And, you know, if you've got, you know, a business that's doing a sizable amount and you can add, you know, a point or two here, a point or two there, you know, over the course of a year, you know, 5 points, you know, adds up. And so, you know, we're fortunate, I feel like, in that our board has always, you know, put the financial success of franchisees first. And that goes back really, you know, to 2009, 2010. Yeah. It's just always pretty much been their philosophy.
Yeah, and that's huge. And, you know, honestly, it's not always the case out there with every franchise organization. And again, you'll hear that from franchisees. If they feel good about it or bad about it, that's the best source to get that information from. But yeah, I mean, one of my mentors who's, you know, owned many businesses and sold businesses, you know, that's something that I've really learned from him is, you know, you don't make a business more profitable usually on one particular line item on your P&L. It comes from small incremental improvements in numerous areas of the business that over time continue to add to your bottom line, right? So like you said, you pick up a point here, you pick up a half a point over here, a couple points over here. I mean, you know, if you've got a high six-figure, seven-figure plus business, 3 to 4 to 5 net margin points, you're talking significant increase in profitability. So, and I can say as a franchisee, the changes that you have made and are working to make are much appreciated. And, you know, from my opinion as a franchisee, from my perspective, it's very clear that, you know, you and the team in the home office are working very hard to make sure that franchisees are in a position to be profitable, right? There's no guarantee, right? Again, franchisees have to do the work. They've got to show up and put in the effort. But, you know, you guys are, I think, doing the right things to put us in a position to be profitable, successful, and happy. And good franchisors, they look at it that way because they know that if they want to continue to be able to grow their system and grow their brand, people interested in the franchise opportunity are talking to other franchisees. And if you got a bunch of pissed off, frustrated franchisees, guess what you're not going to do? Sell more franchises, right? So, you know, maybe you as the home office, you sacrifice a margin point here and there because you're putting franchisees first, but you'll end up with a lot more franchisees. Everyone will be happy, successful, and motivated. So it's more of that long-term view versus the short-term view that some franchisors do take.
Yeah, I would agree 100%.
So, you know, as a pretty much a lifelong entrepreneur, you know, you've had a lot of success as a business owner. You've also, you know, made some mistakes along the way. You know, I want to spend just a couple minutes here talking about maybe some advice that you would give to an aspiring entrepreneur. A lot of the people that listen to this podcast are, you know, kind of at a point where, you know, maybe they know they want to get into business for themselves, but they're not quite at that point and they don't necessarily know, you know, exactly what their next step should be. So maybe first of all, give us some advice based on your own learning. So the question I wanted to ask you is, and I don't know that I could guess the answer of this, so I'm kind of interested to hear it myself, but you know, what is the biggest mistake that you've ever made as an entrepreneur? And don't say hiring me.
You know, probably not all businesses go well. And probably the biggest mistake I probably made that I've learned from, and I've talked to people within the Shelf Genie system about this, is when to call it quits. I was in the retail appliance business, you know, during the recession, and I made a decision to invest about $75,000 in that business to add on another several lines of different things that we could sell, and it just didn't turn out well. It was $75,000 more of debt I had at a particular time when I closed. And you know, I probably, when I made the decision to add those lines on, I probably should have just said, okay, I'm not going to do anything and we'll just roll with it, and would have probably come to the same decision regardless, but I would have just had, you know, $75,000 in my pocket rather than just out there. Yeah. Because one of the things, you know, that I probably learned the most then is that you can make more money, you can't make more time. And so if you're, you know, in that area where you're doubting yourself and your ability to go forward, you need to look at it and just say, okay, if I call this today, am I going to be better off? If you wait 6 months and you find yourself in the same situation, then you've lost time and money. And yep. You know, like I mentioned, you can make more money, but you can't make up more time. And you could have used that time to find something new to transition, you know. And so that's probably the biggest, you know, mistake or biggest learning that I've had, you know, as an entrepreneur.
Don't be afraid to cut bait. If it seems like it's not working,
right,
go ahead and cut your losses. And I mean, you were very helpful, you know, for Kelly and I when we were pretty early in as Shelf Genie franchisees. We'd made a bad hire with an installer, and you know, pretty quickly into it, we started getting some very bad feedback from clients just about, you know, customer service. And you know, I mean, honestly, he was being disrespectful to clients and that sort of thing. And you know, I reached out to you for some advice, and your advice was cut bait as quickly as you possibly can. Don't even try to salvage it. You know, don't even worry about if only half of it's true. Like, even if half of it's true, he's not a good fit. Cut bait. And like literally the next morning, I'm in a U-Haul truck at 8 a.m. headed to Myrtle Beach to collect, you know, like $100,000 worth of materials that this guy was scheduled to install for us. And it was the best thing we could have done. It hurt, but it would have hurt a lot more if we would have let it run for another several weeks or several months. So no, I think that's great advice that I've benefited from myself. What are some of the biggest mistakes that you see franchisees make? And you can, you know, use Shelf Genie as an example, since that's obviously what you're closest to. But, you know, what are some of the biggest mistakes you see like brand new franchisees make as they're trying to get established? And then, you know, maybe if there's a different answer for what are some of the biggest mistakes you see established franchisees make?
So for new franchisees, and actually this probably goes for older franchisees in the Shelf Genie system in general, is really not knowing and understanding their numbers.
Yeah.
And that's really probably just for, you know, any business in general. I had someone that sent me some information last week, like, here's the plan I'm going to go on. And they listed out their numbers. I may have even shared it with you. And the first thing I noticed was this won't work. They don't know their numbers. They were trying, their ROI was too small. Their percentage on advertising was way too high. I think if they did the quick math, because I could do it in about 15 seconds, it would have left them with about 5% profit. And that was never going to work.
Yeah.
So you know, knowing your numbers is key. You know, we've seen it where people say they don't feel like they can provide a bonus to their client, to their designers, if their designers reach a certain level of revenue per appointment, or they don't feel like they can compensate their designers if their designers go out and self-generate. They can't pay them more. And that's just really a simple fact of not knowing their number. So
yeah.
I don't think that's necessarily just franchisees. I think it's really people, you know, in all businesses.
Well, for sure. I mean, the numbers don't lie, right? It's always going to tell the true story. I mean, you could have a business and you feel like everything's really clicking, and you dig into the numbers and realize they don't add up. So, I think that's good advice. Anything else for established franchisees? I mean, things that you've seen in your experience where, you know, they've got a pretty nice established business, and then maybe, you know, there's some common mistakes that you see, and that causes them to go backwards or maybe plateau.
Yeah, I've seen a couple people that they start really micromanaging their advertising and things that are, you know, borderline, they start to cut out and they cut out more and more, and just you see them stair step their sales down. Mm-hmm. Several years ago, I had a franchisee who said, you know, the best year I had was this year. And I said, well, what are you doing different? He said, what do you mean? And I said, well, are you doing less shows? Are you doing less advertising? And he said, no, I'm doing the same thing. And I'd already done the math and the research for him. And so I looked and I said, in that particular year, here's what you spent on marketing. And every year you spent less, and every year you spent less, your sales were down. And I'm not advocating just spending money to spend money.
Sure.
Go back and look and see through the years what you cut down, what you could add back, and selectively, you know, add stuff back. And that particular person was able to go back and increase his sales and was able to sell his business within the last 2 years.
That's a common, I think, misconception. And different businesses are different in terms of how marketing intensive they may be. But, you know, a lot of people seem to look at marketing as an expense, and really you need to look at it as an investment, right? It's a simple ROI calculation. And so if you can generate more revenue and ultimately more profitability by spending more, why not? Right? Why would you not? It's an investment. So I think that's good advice as well. Any advice that you would give, and we may have hit on some of these already, but, you know, quickly, if there's anything else, any advice you'd give to someone that's at the point right now where they're starting to explore or investigate some franchise opportunities?
Yeah. I mean, I would definitely validate with as many people as you can, successful and non-successful, because you want to find out, you know, what are the hurdles that people are having to overcome.
Yeah.
And, you know, just finding out what's going on, what is the temperament of the franchise, how do they feel? How do they feel about the franchisor? I mean, sometimes it's not all about money. You know, people can be doing well, but they're not happy for other reasons. Mm-hmm. And it's good to find out, okay, what are they experiencing? Is that an experience across the system? Is that something that is going to bother me? Is it something that's not going to bother me? Just so you kind of know what environment you're going into.
Yeah, I think that's perfect advice. I mean, I tell people that I work with, that opportunity to validate and talk to other franchisees is without doubt the most valuable step in the whole investigative process. It's where you can really learn. And I like the point you made. Of course, you want to talk to the successful franchisees, but talk to some people that aren't doing well, right? Talk to some people that are just getting started. Talk to some people that have been in business for a very long time. I mean, you're going to get different perspectives and different point of views from everyone that you talk to. And, you know, once you have enough of those conversations, you should come away with a pretty realistic idea of, you know, what this opportunity is. And then you got to do some self-reflection. Then you got to look in the mirror and say, all right, based on what I've learned, am I more like the people that are successful in this business, or am I more like the people that are not successful? And that's, you know, again, in my opinion, the most valuable exercise that you'll go through when evaluating a franchise. So if you can hang with me for like another minute or two, I've just got like a real quick lightning round of questions that I like to ask everyone that comes on the podcast. So first of those questions is, what is the best advice you've ever received? And that could be in business or just in life.
In business, it was probably just, you know, take care of the business. If you take care of the business will take care of you. And it doesn't necessarily mean, you know, being there every day, but it really just means being on top of it. Mm-hmm. Whether it's, you know, knowing your numbers or knowing what's going on, you know, in the business around you. Because if you're not paying attention, I mean, nobody else is going to do it. And you're probably not going to have the results that you would like.
Well, I like that. I mean, I would say even if you're working on the wrong things in your business as the owner, that's not taking care of the business.
Agreed. Yep.
Yeah, that's good. Next question. Do you have a morning routine? And if so, do you mind sharing that with us?
Yeah, so mine's changed over time. I used to get up and ride my bike every morning, and when I started traveling, I just got out of the habit of doing that. But generally, I will get up and read my emails. I'll read a digital version of the paper. I've got a couple of emails that come out daily. And then, you know, a benefit of the pandemic is I have started riding my bike again. So I'll get up, you know, every morning and I'll ride usually 8 to 10 miles. And I may listen to something or generally I'm reading something, that, like I said, the paper or some of these daily emails that I get.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, with the pandemic, you haven't had that 4 a.m. Monday morning flight to Atlanta as part of your at least weekly morning routine, huh?
I do not miss that.
Yeah, I bet. What book are you reading right now?
I'm not reading anything right now. I just finished reading one that I guess it's a semi business book. It's called Shoe Dogs. It was by Phil Knight.
Yeah.
Nike, and that was really good.
That's awesome, isn't it? Yeah.
Yeah, and I really enjoyed that. Has a lot of a good key parts to it. That was really enjoyable.
So I read that probably almost 2 years ago, and then that set me down this whole like rabbit hole of reading other similar kind of biographies. So I read Elon Musk. I just finished one about Jeff Bezos and Amazon. I read one about Twitter and the whole is called Hatching Twitter. But yeah, I find that type of thing interesting. But Shoe Dog was probably the best of those type of books that I've read. It was fascinating.
Yeah, it was pretty cool.
Yeah. All right, last question. What is your definition of freedom, and are you living it?
That's deep.
I'm capable of getting deep. Give me some credit here.
I would say, you know, my definition of living it is, you know, are you living your life, you know, the way you want on your own terms?
Yeah.
You know, and I would say for the most part, I am, you know, if I had everything exactly like I wanted, I would just work remotely from an island. and that would be, you know, my background. Somewhere where it's warm, you know, 365 days a year, and there's warm weather and sunlight. But you know, outside of that, I would say I'm living it.
Well, hey, I think you're one good franchise business away from being able to make that a reality. So if you want to explore some good franchise opportunities, I know a guy.
I do know a guy. Yes.
No, I like it, man. I love it. Well, look, I really appreciate you coming on and doing this. Also, just wanted to say thank you for everything that you've taught me over the years. You've you know, really been a great mentor to me, and definitely not the worst boss I've ever had either. So appreciate everything. Where can people connect with you if they want to, you know, have a conversation with you, and where can people learn more about Shelf Genie and the franchise opportunities at Shelf Genie?
If you want to connect with me, I'm on LinkedIn. My contact information is on there. If you want to find out more about Shelf Genie, you can go to your local franchise consultant like Wes Barefoot, or you can go to shelfgenie.com.
Very cool. Well, look, man, again, I appreciate it. Always good catching up with you. Thanks for dropping in to the Path to Freedom podcast.
Enjoyed it.
Thanks for dropping in with me on this episode of the Path to Freedom podcast. I hope you got a ton of value and learned something new. And if you did, please make sure to subscribe and follow the Path to Freedom podcast wherever you get your podcasts. And also, please share with someone else that may also get value from it. And if you're interested in learning more about how you can take steps to getting into business for yourself, I'd love to speak with you. Connect with me online at pathtofreedom.com. That's path, the number 2, FRDM.com. Or shoot me an email at wes@pathtofreedom.com, spelled the same way. And if you know anyone else that may be interested in speaking with me, I'd love to meet them. Please forward this podcast along to them and encourage them to reach out. Thanks again for joining me today, and I'll see you next time. Now go drop in.